interrupt this broadcast to bring you this important bulletin from the United Press. Flash, Washington.
We interrupt our program to bring you a special broadcast. The German news agency...
We interrupt this program to bring you a news bulletin from Washington. The White House has just announced...
Here is a news bulletin. Shots have reportedly been fired.
Here's another late development, and this news keeps coming in.
This is an NBC News hotline report.
Special report. Verdict sparks violence. National emergency.
First time, we are bringing you the full story of what happened. We are giving you all the evidence, based only on the secret testimony of the miserable souls who survived this terrifying ordeal. The incidents, the places. My friend, we cannot keep this a secret any longer. Can your hearts stand the shocking facts of the true story of Joshua P. Warren?
From the land of the sky and to high strangers around the globe, this is Speaking of Strange with Joshua P. Warren.
And the world is becoming more and more insane every day. Welcome to the program that gives you breaking news and insight regarding the paranormal and downright weird, where the unusual becomes usual, and we don't just discuss it. We go in the field to investigate. Let's start tonight in China. Here's a story about a non-Chinese tourist, a woman who had been visiting China. Apparently on her way out of China, she was at the airport security, and the security folks there realized that she had a little bottle full of some liquid that she was not allowed to bring on the plane. I guess it was a water bottle or some kind of a beverage. So they told her they're either going to throw it away or she has to drink it. So the woman tipped back the small bottle and drank the contents, but security became suspicious when she refused to swallow. Eventually, they convinced her to spit out what she was holding in her mouth, a large cluster of tadpoles. She was trying to smuggle a bunch of live tadpoles out of China. She claimed they were a gift from a friend while she had been visiting China, but they told her, sorry, she had to discard of the small creatures. What a way to try to sneak some tadpoles out of China. Thanks for joining us. I'm your host, Joshua P. Warren, author of books like Haunted Asheville, How to Hunt Ghosts, and The Secret Wisdom of Kukulkan. I'm founder and president of Lemur Paranormal Investigations. My producer and engineer tonight is Hardwood Forrest Connor. Good evening, Forrest.
Good evening, Joshua. Did they say what nationality that woman was?
No, I was looking for that. Apparently she was non-Chinese, but they don't say.
She wasn't French, was she?
That would be in line with their cuisine, perhaps?
Maybe.
Or if these are Chinese tadpoles, you swallow them, but you get hungry 30 minutes later, right?
True.
Wah, wah, wah. Okay, so, yeah, but I don't understand why that people are so dead set on smuggling animals out of places. We read these weird stories all the time.
Right.
About people who are cramming bizarro animals in their body. You know, they're practically hollowing out babies and stuffing them with small marmots and things. I think I read that somewhere. So I don't know. I've never been tempted to smuggle a creature out of another place, have you?
Never.
But I must say, however, in Puerto Rico, they have these extremely tiny little frogs.
Okay.
The coquis. You can hardly see them. They're so small. But they make this really loud whistling
and type of sound, which supposedly sounds like coquille, coquille. And I bet you it'd be kind of easy to smuggle out a little coquille.
But would you keep it alive? I mean, you can smuggle it out, but would it be alive when once you...
You'd feel horrible. I think if every time a coquille dies, a baby angel loses its wings. And you don't want that karma on your soul. And you better remember that, Investigator Shelley Wright of Wright's Coin Shop, because you are going to be on the Puerto Rico expedition that's coming up in, gosh, just a couple of weeks now, right?
Yeah.
Can you believe it?
No. It's coming up so quickly.
Well, I'm going to be doing a lot of stuff in Puerto Rico this year, and we'll talk more about that later on. But, Shelley, you know, when we go into the El Yunque rainforest, if we actually, if you behave and you make a good impression on our guide, Manuel,
mm-hmm.
he may feel inclined to teach you the ancient native secret technique of finding coquilles. It's an almost impossible task to find a coquille if you don't know the secret.
I bet I could find one.
You think you could find one without knowing the secret?
No. I want to know the secret. I will be on my best behavior. Okay. Ha ha.
I know the secret, but I would never betray Manuel when it comes to this.
If he doesn't want to tell you himself...
You know, the most I will do is find one and show it to you,
mm-hmm.
but the secret remains within the brotherhood of the El Yunque. Forrest, we got to get you down there sometime, man.
I know. I mean, I've been there once.
You went. We took a cruise there. It was the first time I went to Puerto Rico.
Right.
We spent a few hours there that evening and had a wonderful time. And but gosh, since then, you know, I've been back, I don't even know how many times. I've lost count now. We got to get you and Kelly down there.
I'd love it.
Yeah, you'd have a great time. There will be plenty of opportunities the rest of this year, I think.
I hope so.
Yeah. Well, you know, there are a lot of people right now who have this sense of adventure swelling up inside them. They want to get out. They want to do something they've always wanted to do. And 1 week ago, Shelley Wright introduced me to a couple of friends of hers, a woman named Kelly, and her boyfriend named Colin Lee. Now, Colin Lee, he's tall, got a slim, athletic build. The guy was wearing a ball cap and kind of a weatherproof hiking coat, and he was one of the most excited people that I have seen in a long time, and that is because he, at that time, was 7 days away of taking the first step on a journey that he has been planning and preparing for over the past 3 years or more. Just today, he finally took his very first step onto the Appalachian Trail, which he intends to walk in its entirety over the next 6 months. Now, for those of you who are listening elsewhere and you may not know exactly what the Appalachian Trail is, it is a trail that begins in Georgia at a place called Springer Mountain and ends in Maine, a mountain there called Mount Katahdin. And it's 2,200 miles on foot over all kinds of hazardous terrain. So you start in Georgia, it goes through North Carolina, Tennessee, Virginia, West Virginia, Maryland, Pennsylvania, New Jersey, New York, Connecticut, Massachusetts, Vermont, New Hampshire, and finally Maine. Hazards along the way include severe weather, black bears, wild boar, tick-borne diseases, mosquitoes, yellow jackets, biting flies, chiggers, steep grades, limited water, diarrhea from water, poison ivy, and venomous snakes.
Sounds like fun.
Yeah. And you know, the weather, he started today, and the weather is not so great in Georgia this week. So I don't know what kind of weather he's going to be dealing with. But he is so excited about this. And you know, growing up in this area, you always hear legends about people who have once walked the Appalachian Trail, right, guys?
Yes.
You hear.
Yeah.
But and maybe as a youth, there's this romantic idea that would be a fun little adventure to have. But at this point in my life, not going to happen. There are too many other fun things to do in a world this huge over 6 months rather than walk through bears and wild boar and snakes and cliffs and blizzards and God knows what else. I'd rather go explore maybe like, a beach. So, but he's 35. And here's the thing. I would be interested in having him on the show anyway, just to tell us about this adventure. But if he will talk about it, and he said he would, I hope he feels comfortable. He actually told me that one of the reasons that he became so inspired to do this is because of a paranormal experience that he had. And so I won't tell you anything more about that. Hopefully you'll be able to hear it from his mouth. But it's pretty amazing what happened to him, I think, and how it has affected the way he feels about this. It's almost like this is a mission for him. He has to do it. He feels guided to do this thing at this point in his life. And by the way, this fellow Cullen, he's already traveled and done a lot of amazing stuff. He's been to Haiti numerous times, helping out earthquake victims, and he's been like a youth counselor in all these tough areas, and so he'll tell us about all that. The idea here is to see if we can get a cell phone signal from him tonight, wherever he happens to be. He set out at noon today, so I am assuming he is probably at a campsite still somewhere in Georgia. I don't think you would make it out of Georgia in one day's hike. Do you have any thoughts on that?
No. Granger Mountain, I think you've got about at least 50 miles before you get out of Georgia on the Appalachian Trail, if not more.
Okay. So he'd have to be pretty gung-ho
right
on his first day of hiking. Just use up all of his energy to make it out. So we are assuming he is somewhere in the middle of nowhere in the mountains of Georgia, and we are going to attempt hour number two of the show tonight to get him on the program, and we'll ask him about, you know, how's it been going, his first day of attempting this. Now, mind you, a lot of people attempt to do this every year, thousands of people, but only about 10 or 15% actually make it all the way to the end. So if, you know, and he has every intention of doing that. So we'll talk to him hopefully about his first day, and then we'll touch base with him over the next 6 months from time to time. And then hopefully in 6 months, we'll have a guy who's walked the whole trail who can tell us about his whole little adventure there and weirdos he encountered and, you know, threatening scenarios he was in. So that should be fun. Again, if we can get the signal, if not, then we'll just keep trying on future shows until we can get a hold of him. Okay, we're going to take our first break. And when we come back, you know, this is the first show of April. And it is kind of a tradition on this program for me to, on the first show of April every year, remind everybody about just what a weird month historically April is. I often say a bad luck month, but I don't know, maybe that's an oversimplification. It depends on your perspective as to whether it's good or bad, but a lot of very significant things happen in April. So I'll refresh you on that when we return, because this is the show where the amazing and the remarkable, the extraordinary, and the downright weird are featured for you, my friends. It's the show where the unusual becomes usual. I'm your host, Joshua P. Warren. Thanks for spending your evening with us. You are listening to Speaking of Strange.
Spring is here, a suffering is here. Life is Skittles and life is beer. I think the loveliest time of the year is the spring. I do, don't you? Of course you do. But there's one thing that makes spring complete for me and makes every Sunday a treat for me. All the world seems in tune on a spring afternoon when we're poisoning pigeons in the park. Every Sunday you'll see my sweetheart and me as we poison the pigeons in the park. When they see us coming, the birdies all try and hide. But they still go for peanuts when coated with cyanide. The sun's shining bright, everything seems all right when we're poisoning pigeons in the park. We've gained notoriety and caused much anxiety in the Audubon Society with our games. They call it impiety and lack of propriety and quite a variety of unpleasant names. But it's not against any religion to want to dispose of a pigeon. So if Sunday you're free, why don't you come with me and we'll poison the pigeons in the park. And maybe we'll do in a squirrel or two while we're poisoning pigeons in the park. We'll murder them all amid laughter and merriment, except for the few we take home to experiment. My pulse will be quickening with each drop of strychnine we feed to a pigeon. It just takes a smidgen to poison a pigeon in the park.
Yeah, it's officially spring now, my friends. Another one of our little traditions here on Speaking of Strange. I am your host, Joshua P. Warren. And we have just all kinds of weird, amazing, sometimes twisted news to share with you tonight. And we'll just see at what rate we can make it through all this. But, you know, as I mentioned before the break, April is historically an outstanding month. And I didn't even realize this myself until long ago. I dated a girl named April. Now, don't get me wrong. April was a wonderful person. Her birthday was, I think, around April the 19th. But I realized after a while that around her birthday, all of these often tragic things would happen in the news. And it was so prevalent that I started doing research, and then this light bulb went off. I doubt I'm the first person to realize this pattern, but an astounding amount of really dramatic things have occurred in April. And, you know, again, I used to say, well, it's bad luck April. Now I don't feel comfortable just saying it that blatantly, because it depends on your relationship to the event. For example, a war might start in April, but then a war also might end in April, right? So, nonetheless, you can interpret this however you want, but let me just go down a list of some of the things that I like to point out about April, and especially April in the United States. A lot of these things relate specifically to our country. Of course, the month starts with April Fool's Day, a day to make fun of people and take advantage of their stupidity and naivete. It's also tax time here in the U.S., which is stressful for a lot of people. The American Revolution started in April with Paul Revere's ride, and it also ended in April of 1775. Paul Revere's ride was 1775. So the revolution started and ended in April. The American Civil War started April of 1861 and ended April 1865, thus considered across five Aprils. In fact, the Battle of Asheville happened in April. The Rwandan genocide was in April of 1994. The Armenian genocide was April of 1915. President Abraham Lincoln was assassinated April 14th of 1865. The 1906 San Francisco earthquake was April 18th. The Titanic sank April 14th and 15th of 1912. The Red Baron killed his 80th victim before being gunned down himself April of 1918. Martin Luther King Jr. was assassinated April 4th of 1968. Apollo 13, the notorious unsuccessful mission to the moon, launched April 11th of 1970. The Chernobyl nuclear accident was April 26th of 1986. The 1992 Los Angeles riots after the Rodney King verdict, April 29th of 1992. The Bloody End to the Branch Davidian Siege in Waco, Texas, April 19th of 1993. The Oklahoma City bombing was April 19th of 1995. The Columbine High School Massacre in Littleton, Colorado was April 20th of 1999. April 2nd of 2006, 29 people died in Tennessee of tornadoes. Other states had a lot of deaths as well. April 2007, the Virginia Tech Massacre occurred. April 20th of 2010, the Deepwater Horizon drilling rig exploded, killing 11 people and creating one of the largest environmental disasters in history. Adolf Hitler was born April 20th of 1889, and he died April 30th of 1945. Saddam Hussein was born April 28th of 1937, and his reign in Iraq ended with the war April 9th of 2003. Anton LaVey, founder of the Church of Satan, was born April 11th of 1930. Many historians believe that Jesus was actually born around April the 17th, and of course he was also apparently crucified around April, as we know from Easter. Buddha was born on April the 8th. Here, more locally, we tell stories, a weird story, if you've been to our museum, about the ghoul of the old jail that appeared and terrorized men in 1908. Those stories appear in the paper locally April 18th and April 20th. In April 1513, Juan Ponce de Leon set foot on and named Florida, being the first European to do so. And the list goes on and on. I could even tell you about some personal things I've experienced. Like, for example, there's no way I will ever premiere a movie or anything like that in the month of April. I premiered my movie Inbred Rednecks in the month of April, and we had a packed house and two or three sold-out shows. And halfway through the first showing, the projector broke down without a backup. It was a huge disaster. The movie never really gained the same momentum after that. But we are going to try going to Puerto Rico in April. So, who knows, Shelley? Some bad things might happen to us.
No. It's nothing but good. It'll be great.
I hope so. We have to think very positively. We have a really good group going down there with
us. We do.
I don't know exactly what kind of sense to make of this or what connection, but Shelley, do you know what the birthstone of April is?
No.
It is the diamond.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah.
I forgot.
So, yeah, because I remember when I was dating this girl, April, one day I was like, oh, I'm going to get her a birthstone ring. And I was like, oh, nix that. You hit the bad luck lotto on that one. what do you think about diamonds? You know, diamonds have kind of an evil reputation, don't they?
They do.
I mean, for one thing, you know, they're hard and they cut things. Secondly, you have the whole blood diamond trade. I don't know. As a woman, what are your thoughts on maybe the peculiar relationship that diamonds might have with a month like April, Shelley Wright?
With a month?
Yeah, it's an odd question, I know.
It is an odd question. Yeah. I was prepared to answer, do you like diamonds, do you not, why?
Oh,
yeah.
Ask the obvious questions.
Diamonds are great, but they're not my favorite.
You know, some people believe that diamonds can actually store emotional energy better than many other minerals. I mean, all minerals, everything that has sort of a crystalline structure, has the potential to store energy. We know it has this very interesting relationship with electricity. But some people think diamonds especially have that characteristic. Do you have diamonds? Do you wear diamonds, Shelley?
Fake diamonds. No, I've got a real diamond. I don't wear it very often. I'm more of a garnet an emerald person?
Because I know that you are kind of sensitive about even going into, say, an antique store, because sometimes you think you can sort of pick up a vibe off of objects that makes you a little uncomfortable, right?
I do not like antique shops.
So do you have that type of experience when it comes to gemstones?
Yes, I do get certain feelings off certain things sometimes.
Well, look at the Hope Diamond, for example.
Exactly. It's cursed.
Yeah. And I guess that's another really good example of how, that you know, there is this sort of odd sense that diamonds can hold energy, hence the curse of the Hope Diamond. Okay, we're going to take a break. When we come back, there's a very interesting little story that I want to share with you about a UFO picture that was taken in our area the other day. And also, you may recall, there's a town nearby here called Waynesville, North Carolina. And recently a guy got in trouble there for spanking another man. Well, that same guy is in trouble again for spanking another man. I'll tell you about it when we return. I'm Joshua P. Warren. It's the show where the unusual becomes usual. It's called Speaking of Strange.
Standing alone, my senses.
North Carolina, land of the sky, and to high strangers around the world, you're listening to Speaking of Strange, the show where the unusual becomes usual. And, you know, if you get in trouble once for spanking a man, and you make headlines, you make the news, you're just a weirdo. But if you get in trouble twice and make the news for spanking a man, you're now a legend. You are now the Waynesville spanker.
Waynesville. I was ready for you to say Florida there.
No, this is the Waynesville spanker. Do you recall this?
I vaguely remember the spanker story.
The notorious spanker of Waynesville. That'll be a horror movie in 100 years. The spanker. I read a story, I don't know, a month or two ago, about this man in Waynesville who was griping at a tenant because the tenant was not paying his rent on time. And I forget the details of that first story, but somehow this guy, who, by the way, was once voted Citizen of the Year in Waynesville, he snapped, yes. And he spanked this tenant, another grown man, which, by the way, that's impressive. If you can, it's one thing to punch a guy, but if you can manhandle another man, bend him over your knee or something like that, and just spank him, What a humiliation. So this went, you know, to the legal system. I'm not even sure that has been resolved. And now here we go, another story. This is from Fox News. This time, a man has come forth and filed a lawsuit. This guy is a 57-year-old mentally disabled man. And his story, apparently, is that I guess the spanker owns a business of some kind, and that this 57-year-old man was hired to stock shelves there. And that on at least three occasions, the claim is that the 57-year-old man was taken into the back room, and the spanker says, "You're being bad because you're talking to customers," and takes out a paddle and spanks him. That's what the spanker does. And so at first they say the man didn't tell anybody about this. Now, you know, this claim is coming out there. His family is outraged and shocked and whatnot. So it's now becoming some type of a character, a habitual character flaw with the spanker. And, you know, since the spanker lives right now, how far is how many, you can drive there and how long, you know exactly how long, don't you?
About, you can make it in 20, 25 minutes.
20 minutes, okay. Well, we even broadcast from a transmitter in Waynesville.
We do.
So if the spanker would like to come on our show here and give his side of the story, the invitation is out there. We are not in a position to accuse anybody of anything. We're simply reading what has been reported in the news. But Spanker, if you can hear my voice, go to speakingofstrange.com, and we'll give you a little platform here to air your side of things before this gets completely out of hand. No pun intended. You told me when we read the story before, Forrest, you weren't all that surprised that things like that would happen in Waynesville,
true,
North Carolina.
True.
Mm-hmm. It's just that quirky small town culture.
It is. I mean, each town has their own little quirks, and
some have a spanker.
I think Waynesville has a tendency to be a spanking area or part, because, like I said before, I'm not surprised it happened. And look, it happened again.
Yes. Maybe. Well, wasn't there some like crazy story around Waynesville years ago about some guy who was operating sort of like an S&M dungeon at his house?
Yes.
Yeah. It's always in the quiet little sleepy towns. Shelley, do you have any Waynesville stories?
No, I don't have any Waynesville stories.
Okay. Well, it's time we start peeling back the layers and get to the bottom of what's happening in Waynesville, North Carolina. Well, Black Mountain, North Carolina, is another sleepy little town that a lot of tourists enjoy. We ate there not too long ago, as a matter of fact, with our little group that was having adventures and field trips. We went to my father's pizza there.
Very tasty.
Yeah, I enjoyed my sandwich immensely, and everybody else seemed to have a good time. But now, you, Shelley, you have a friend, and actually I met her not too long ago for the first time, who is a really good photographer.
Yeah.
And she was driving in the area of Black Mountain on I-40 just a couple days ago, I guess.
Right.
And she saw sort of an odd sight. She saw a truck being towed down the interstate in front of her. So basically the truck was facing her car, and I guess she thought it was just kind of an odd thing to see. So she just snapped a picture out of her windshield of this truck. But then she got home and looks at this picture on a bigger screen and says, "Oh, my God, there's a UFO hovering in the sky over here that I didn't even see when I took the picture," right?
Right.
So you sent me this photo.
Yes.
And again, you know, here you have, it's a great picture, really. I mean, you see the truck in front of her being towed. There is a nice bright patch of sky to the right, and here is this saucer-shaped object that's sort of tilted there. And it looks like, you know, this is a potentially significant UFO picture.
Yeah.
So, but fortunately, your friend, being a good photographer,
yes,
she wanted to do a little further investigation.
Right.
To determine what, you know, what she really had there. You want to tell us what she did, Shelley?
She just tried to recreate things and make sure that there wasn't any crud on the windshield, you know, anything that might possibly lend itself to looking like a UFO. And so it was harder to do it at night. She thought, you know, maybe there's something to it, maybe there's not. But she did figure out that it was just something on the windshield.
Yeah, and I mean, so she actually went out the next day and took a picture against a bright sky, and boom, there's the UFO again.
There it was.
So we wanted to bring this up on the air as a lesson that, you know, if you get a picture of something that you believe is out there in the sky, remember about all the space between you and that thing.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many little layers. You know, you've got, first off, the lens of the camera itself. And then anytime you're shooting through glass, it's a tricky business.
Always.
And, you know, little things can look so incredibly different on a camera, from a camera's perspective.
And she didn't even see it when she was taking the photograph.
Yeah.
She didn't even register with her. So I'm proud of her for taking a scientific approach.
And, you know, we have talked about possibly just, you know, putting this picture out there so that you can see how convincing it looks when there can be a speck of some crap on your windshield. But you know what? I think it's probably a bad idea, because I know if we were to do that, somebody would pick up that picture and start circulating it as a real UFO picture.
Right.
It looks that convincing.
It does.
Because we found out, Forrest, when we were doing the Speaking of Strange UFO experience, 1 year, Jeff from Tennessee, he created this incredible triangular UFO with a laser beam shooting down. And next thing we knew, this had been circulated all around the world.
Well, then it's supposed to be the Irish UFO that...
That's what they say. That's what, you know...
And experts supposed to analyze this thing and say, oh, yes, this is real.
Absolutely. And there are all these quotes attributed to policemen and politicians and all these details about when this was captured in Ireland. And right around that same time, an issue of Fate magazine came out that had an illustration on the cover that looked incredibly similar to this craft. It'd be difficult for me to think that it wasn't inspired by that footage. So people are more than happy to take something that looks vaguely real and make up a bunch of BS to just circulate it for fun.
Yeah.
But I admire your friend for having that that honest sense of criticism and self-examination, because now if she gets a real UFO picture, well, we will feel confident that it's coming from a really reliable source.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah. So it's just a lesson for everybody to keep in mind. It's easy to get excited, but, you know, I'll tell you something else, though. If you take a photograph and you think that you might be photographing something that is anomalous or paranormal, one of the best things you can do is just keep taking shots, because it's difficult when you just have one image to figure out all the variables. But if you have several images, controls, basically, you can look at that and determine more about what we might be seeing. Obviously, in your friend's case, she wasn't trying to take a picture of a UFO, so she wasn't thinking to do that.
Right.
But for those of you who are paranormal investigators, if it's worth hitting the button once, it's worth hitting it several times. Because if you get something, it will be invaluable for analysts to be able to compare and figure out what you have. We're going to take a break. When we come back, well, here's a story from Seattle. Says here, headline, Easter egg hunt turns violent. Uh-oh, what happened? I'll tell you when we come back. I'm Joshua P. Warren. This is Speaking of Strange. we are in the final minutes of hour one of tonight's Speaking of Strange. I'm Joshua P. Warren. And next hour, if we are able to get cell reception, we are going to have a chat with Colin Lee. He is in the field, and today at noon, he began his journey on the Appalachian Trail. He is intending to walk the whole thing, all 2,200 miles of it, from Georgia up to Maine. And so we will attempt to get in touch with him, ask him what his first day was like, and why he decided to do this. It is strange. It's unusual. Most people do not want to take 6 months out of their lives and walk through the remote wilderness. And those who make it, which is a small percentage, 10 or 15% of the people who attempt it, have some pretty crazy stories to tell. There have been many books written about adventures on the Appalachian Trail. So hopefully we'll be able to get in touch with Colin when we come back. So I hope everybody had a good Easter. Shelley, did you do any Easter egg hunting?
No, I didn't.
Does your mother still give you an Easter egg or an Easter basket, I should say?
No, I didn't even get a chocolate bunny rabbit.
Nope, nobody loves Shelley. How about you? Did you get... No?
Didn't get anything.
I did. Yep, I got... Every year, I still get a basket full of candy. I can't eat much of it, though.
Well, your mom's a great person.
She is. She's very sweet.
So what did that say about your mom's, then?
My mother doesn't live here in town, so...
Oh, that explains it.
Yeah. Now, your mother lives in town, Miss Wright.
Yes, she does.
And they owe you a lot, because you bring in all that money for them at the shop. So they should at least give you some chocolate.
Chocolate would be good.
Well, an Easter egg hunt went really bad in Seattle, apparently. You know, it's funny because what is supposed to be more peaceful and fun-looking kind than an Easter egg hunt. But here we go with the moms again. Apparently there was a big Easter egg hunt at a zoo there in Seattle. And a statement from the police department blotter says, quote, "This all went down when one woman reportedly pushed a child aside as her own child was scrambling towards some brightly colored eggs," end quote. So this mom pushes this other kid out of the way so her kid can get the eggs. The other kid's mom sees this happen.
Uh-oh.
Next thing you know, yeah, fisticuffs are flying. One of the women quickly had a bloody nose.
What?
Yep, all over that nice Easter dress.
That's just... so silly.
It just, you know, the whole thing escalated until it was totally out of control. Other mothers were getting involved then. And so now it's just a big mess, and they're trying to sort out what charges belong where. Because one mom pushed another kid around.
God.
Here's a story from York, Pennsylvania. A dog that was left in an unattended vehicle accidentally pushed the gear into drive and ran over a man.
Oh! Whoops.
It happened early in the morning, and so here's this pedestrian lying in the street, and people look over and see a dog at the wheel of the car that just ran over him.
Bad dog.
What a weird thing to see. They say that the car had been left running with the dog inside, and the dog somehow put the car into gear, and they say that eventually the car hit another parked vehicle and came to a stop there. The pedestrian was unconscious. He's in the hospital. They're treating him for his injuries, and they have not released the name of the dog owner.
Does your insurance cover it if your dog is driving?
I don't know. That's a good question. Anybody have any experience with that?
No.
That's a rough one.
these kinds of stories, you know, they remind me of a story that Lloyd Arbuck, I believe, used to tell people about his adventures with ghost hunting. He said that, he's a great parapsychologist, and he said that there was a couple that contacted him and said that something creepy was happening at their house. And when they would call their own house, somebody would answer the phone, even when they weren't there, and would just go, some creepy evil spirit, right? And this would happen, you know, frequently. So, of course, he goes to do his investigation. He sets up a camera. He calls the house, and the family dog runs over and knocks over the receiver. And mystery solved. So that's yeah, he swears that's true. But that shows you how easy it is to bust some of these paranormal cases. Okay, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we will keep your fingers crossed. Hopefully we'll have Colin Lee with us on the line from the Appalachian Trail, somewhere out there in the middle of nowhere. And if we can get him, I think you'll hear an interesting story about the things that inspired him to take on this great adventure. This is the show where the unusual becomes usual. I'm your host, Joshua P. Warren. You're listening to Speaking of Strange.